kill, and destroy. Satan is doing what Satan does, and he takes what he does seriously. And he doesn't play at it. He is vicious. He will spend any amount of money to destroy souls. He will give any sacrifice. There is no blow too low that he won't do it. There is nothing too evil that he won't try. And we, our best bet is to call a committee meeting. And the world goes to hell. Day after day. I read the obituaries every day. I started doing it because people would get mad if a supporter passed away and they were still getting a prayer letter. And their family would get mad. And instead I see day after day, generation of young people, 30, 40, 20, and it's always passed away unexpectedly. And I know it's suicide, and I know it's overdosing, because I cannot live any longer in this world. And we have the hope that changes things. If you just put up the lion heart, I don't know if that's Seth. There it is, all right. For years, at the end of high school, just like so many things that I experienced as a youth pastor and with other youth pastors I know, kids get to this age after high school, and can I tell you the truth? Not all of them go off to Christian college and make nice middle-class families. There's so many of them who, after high school, then are sitting at local church, and I kind of don't fit in the youth group, and I don't want to be the creepy 20-year-old hanging out with the 14-year-olds in church youth group and be a problem. But there's nothing for me. There's nothing for my generation. So many others are off to college, and I'm at McDonald's or I'm doing whatever else, and I'm trying to make a life, and I don't know where I fit at church anymore. And there's a gap. One day I got a phone call from a young man that I started with when he was 12 years old, whose mom's a heroin addict and suffered from addiction issues all of her life, and his dad abandoned him when he was 2 years old and doesn't send money or support. And there's a welfare check for mom, but whatever she can get for drugs goes there. And there's three boys at home, and you're the biggest and the oldest, and you have taken it upon yourself to try to see that they get fed, that their laundry gets done, that they get to school, that they survive, and no 12-year-old boy should have to do that. And the things that he had to do to survive at home, the skills that he learned to survive at home, are not acceptable to survive in public school, and they're not acceptable in the workforce. And what you have to do to live in one world and make it doesn't work in this other, and you don't fit and you're not wanted, and what do you do? And you struggle with anger and rage, and people are like, well, you need a counselor, you need a therapist. And I'm like, no, you live in crazy. And God never intended you to live in crazy. And your soul is angry and rejecting of it, and it should be. It should be. It should be unacceptable to put children in that life. It is unacceptable to God, who is the Father of the fatherless. And if you read this book from one end to the other, two groups of people who are absolutely defenseless and helpless. Do not abuse widows. Do not abuse those whose husbands have passed away and nobody is there to take care of them. And do not abuse the poor and the fatherless. And yet our culture has done nothing but that. Where are rental furniture places other than in a college town? Where are check cashing places? Where are all the payday loan places? Where are all the places that take advantage of those in poverty in our culture today? Well, they're in places where there's poverty. Rich people don't need that. People who know how to take care of themselves don't use those places. And America is doing all the things that Israel did that God said, I'm so mad. All right, and I'm not here to beat you up today. I'm just saying we need to look at this. There is a dumpster out back of our culture, and it stinks, and it's growing every day. And instead of sprinkling some air freshener around it, we need to clean house. And we need to rescue kids because they're not garbage. And we can't throw away another generation. It breaks God's heart, and it ought to break yours if you know him. A kid calls me, and he came home to find two trash bags of clothes on the front porch. And mom's boyfriend doesn't want you here anymore, and you're 18 years old, and your welfare check has stopped. Get out. I don't care where you go. Your stuff is on the front porch. You can't even come inside. And he called me. And I remember that kid when he was an angry young man and dealing with him and fathering him. And I remember when he came to camp. And I remember the day I was so happy when he walked forward and accepted Christ and prayed with me to come to know Jesus. And I also remember later that same day having to send him home because he got in a fist fight with another kid, because the enemy doesn't give up just because you've come to know Jesus. Those same things trigger a young man even after he comes to know Jesus, until he works that out and grows and matures. But we didn't give up on him. We didn't quit just because he got sent home from camp. We continued to work with him, and he graduated high school, and he got a job, and he bought a car, and he was paying a relative for insurance and giving mom a little rent money. But here's the issue in our culture today. If you're an 18-year-old young man and your family receives aid to dependent children, if your family gets a welfare payment for you, then the month you turn 18, that stops. And if you get a job and you bring home a check, then whatever you earned counts against your family's financial support from the government. So whatever you earn, now your family's benefits are going to be reduced by that, unless you sneak and lie or work under the table. So you are no longer somebody who brings home money to the home. You're somebody, you're a detriment, get out. And so many young men, the day they turn 18, get out. And if you had to survive without, it'd be one thing to leave home. I moved out when I was 17. I knew how to work. I knew how to manage money. I knew how to take care of some things on my car. It was tough, all right? But I had help and I had guidance, and I had, if I needed it, I could move back home. But you take a young person who's raised their brothers, who's never had a dad, who's walked around a passed out mom half the nights of their life, and when she was passed out, it was better than when she was awake. And you put them on the street, and they are completely unprepared for the adult world in which we live. I calmed that young man down, calmed his tears down, and I said, don't you worry. I said, I'm connected with Blair County. I'm the president of the advisory board for Blair County Children, Youth, and Families. I will get on the phone. I know every agency in our county. Our Children and Family Agency has an $11 million budget. I will find you a place to stay. I will find you a bed tonight. We will get this resolved. Give me a little bit. You come down. By the time you get here, I will have an answer. I got on the phone, and by the time he got there, I had no answer. Everybody asked the same question. Does he have a mental health issue? No. Does he have a disability of any kind? No. Is he a drug addict? Is he an alcoholic? Is he in trouble with the law? No, 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 no. If I said yes to any of those things, he'd have had a place to sleep. He'd have had a program. He'd have had a check. He'd have had support. If he was a drug addict, he would have had been welcomed by somebody. If he was an alcoholic or a criminal, there are places that would take him in. But because he tried to be a good kid in a hellish world, there was no place for him to go, and nobody wanted him. And when I got to a government housing agency in Hollidaysburg at our county seat, and I had a government official who was honest with me, he said, listen, he said, the waiting list for government housing in our county is 6 months long. He said, and he's a single person, he's a single young man. He qualifies least. So anybody else who comes in, a woman, a family, anybody, will be at the head of the line over him, and he will constantly be moved down. Sir, I will tell you the truth. He will never get a place to stay. I spent 7 years working on that Blair County Children, Youth, and Families Committee. I walked away that day. I want nothing to do with it anymore. That's what we do. 6 months, he's got to be homeless before you'll help him. By then, he will have a drug problem. By then, he will be an alcoholic. By then, he will have to do something against the law. If he has to sleep on the street for 6 months before you get to him, we will have thrown away his life and everything we tried to redeem at the door. And I was upset and I was angry and I'm like, God, this is wrong. And I found out he's not alone. And that was 7 years ago. God put on my mind there needs to be a place to go. Next slide. For these young people. Because life is heavy, and life is not meant to be dumped on you the day you turn 18. Life is meant to be lowered onto your shoulders slowly as a young man stands up or a young lady stands up and is able to carry it. It starts with chores, right? It starts with some odd jobs. It starts with, I don't know, a paper route. It starts with shoveling snow for the neighbors to earn a few bucks. It starts with learning to carry your load slowly. It's lowered down onto your shoulders. Somebody takes you out, helps you buy your first car. Somebody takes you out and says, this is how you check the oil. Somebody takes you to the bank and helps you open your first bank account. Your parents are supposed to lower the weight of life onto you as you are raising up under it, able to carry the load. If it's dumped on you, on one day, there isn't one of us who could carry that load. Not without a whole lot of brokenness and mess in between if we recover at all. The heft of adult responsibilities, it's supposed to be lowered onto you. I've decided that we need to find a way to do that. That we need to lift the crushing load off the shoulders of those who've been thrown on the street and say, I'm going to put that load back on you. But as you're ready to carry it, I will not carry a son forever, but there is a day to carry his load until he's man enough to carry it. And to dump it on him unprepared is cruel, and it will fail. Next slide. Galatians 6:2 says, bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And then it almost seems schizophrenic because later on it says, but let every man prove his own work. Then he shall have rejoicing in himself alone and not another, for every man shall bear his own burden. Well, which is it? The answer is both. When you are not able to bear your burden, we should bear it for you. If you're poor, if you're fatherless, if you're handicapped, disabled, whatever it might be, then we as the body of Christ ought to be carrying a load for you. But that carrying is never meant to be permanent unless your problem is permanent. The carrying is to be meant to be for a short time, but you, one day, you're going to carry your own load, son. One day, you're going to carry your own burden, and not only that, you're going to go from being a taker to being in a place where you're a giver. To be a place where you, from where you needed assistance, to be in a place now where you can give help to others. We're going to take a young man from needing to be carried to one who can carry his own load. Next slide. I broke it down into the weight of life, because when you talk to young people as they get out and go, you're in a college town, you know this, I got to have a place to stay, need housing, I got to have a job, that's a given, because that's how you pay for a place to stay, I got to have money, and I got to have wheels, because I need wheels to get somewhere, unless you're, I mean, public transportation is available here, it's not in Bellwood, okay? Public transportation is your feet. And what we've designed is a program to give disadvantaged young men the opportunity to be mentored into bearing the heft of life and launched into an adult life and society, and I want them to succeed. I've had 3 kids leave my home, and every one of them is a success. I am so proud of them to watch my daughter up here sing with Seth, all right? I am so proud of all of my kids. I'd be proud of them if they were a mess up. But they're not. They're a success in life. They struggle through everything, but they're a success because life wasn't dumped on them all at once, and they were launched out, and we were there to cheer them on and even to uphold a broken wing now and then, whatever we had to do. That's what family does. And we are called as the body of Christ to be a family to anyone who knows Christ. And for those who don't know Christ, we want to adopt them in. We want them to come to know him. So we're going to lower the heft of life and have training in our home for everything. Housing. How do you clean a toilet? How do you unclog one? I know. I work at the door. Kids need to learn how to do that. How do you do your laundry? How do you wash a floor? How do you vacuum? How do you make your bed? How do you take care of these things? Employment. How do you get a job? How do you talk to somebody in an interview? How do you dress? How do you keep your job? What kind of habits do you need to keep your job? How do you advance at work and not just be stuck in a dead-end place all of your life? How do you manage your money? Good grief, Dave Ramsey's making millions of dollars from college-educated Christians who should know. What are the odds a kid who grew up on welfare with a dysfunctional home and a missing dad has any clue how to run their money? I can't be out of money. I still have checks left. Transportation. How do I get wheels and how do I take care of them? All of us pay uninsured, underinsured motorist insurance. Why? Because there are so many poor people who have no clue how to buy insurance, or that they should, or you know what? Yes, I know I should, but I can't, because it's a choice between keeping the lights on or putting insurance on my car or putting food in the refrigerator or paying insurance on my car. And I know it's wrong, and I know a guy who can give me a sticker for this and that for a few bucks under the table, and that's what I do, because it's about surviving. And we want to teach them to be legitimate citizens in our society. Next slide. We have a savings reward program. Lionheart, this home that we are opening, and we are opening a home, we've already bought it. We have a house. And it's not paid for yet, but I am trusting Jesus that it's going to be paid off before we ever let a young person stay there. I believe that with all of my heart. That's what I asked him for. And he has granted everything I have asked for so far in this and led every step of the way. And the kids don't live there for free. This is not a homeless shelter. I get calls, oh, I need a guy who's got shelter tonight. Lionheart's not for him. Well, what? There is homeless shelters and rescue missions. I want to launch Sons. If he wants to be a son for the next 18 months, we'll talk when we're open. You see, you got to commit 18 months of your life to being there. You can stay a minimum of 18 months. You have to commit to that. And you can leave anywhere between 18 and 24 months, and at 24 months, you're gone. You're launched, but you'll be ready. You'll be ready, and you will have everything you need to go. How do I know? Because we created a savings reward program. The first month you're there, it costs $25. Next month, it's $50. Next month, it's $75. It goes up $25 every month. For those of you who know the power of large numbers and that compounding thing, the weight of life is lowered very gently onto your shoulders. You're going to get a job. You're not going to make a lot of money your first month. And you might even think, I got a little bit of pocket money the first 3 or 4 months that I'm there because I've gotten a ride to work. We guarantee I will take you to work. You will have a phone so you can get a phone call from your boss. All right? Not going to be some high-end thing, but what do young people without a home need? I need a place to stay. I need a ride to work, and I need a way for my boss to reach me. And I need food on the table, and I need a way to wash my clothes. And if you need clothing, well, guess what? All that money you're not paying us right now, you need to get, we're going shopping. Let's go. You're going to get some stuff so that you can be presentable when you get to work. And at the end of 18 months, I believe it's $4,500 will be in your savings reward fund, because all that money you pay in, we do not use. That goes in a reward fund for you. If you stay up to 24 months, there's $7,500 in your launch fund. Adults, young people who are getting ready to go out into this world. Will that get you a car? Will that get you first month's rent and a security deposit and last month's rent? Will that pay for insurance? Will that take care of real world expenses and launch you out? Oh, and by the way, since you came in and you stayed here, you know that bed in your room, that desk in your room, that chair in your room, that dresser in your room? Yeah, take good care of that while you're here, because that's yours forever when you leave. And you have starter furniture. You have all the things a family should do for you, and you've been taught how to manage money. You've been taken to work every day. You will have what a son needs to succeed, and when I launch you, it's a one-time ticket, son, but you're prepared, and you will launch out into success in life. We are not a shelter. You see, every time I've talked with the people who run the shelters, they keep coming back, they keep coming back, they get a job for a while, they keep coming back, or they go to the next town. I don't want that. I want to launch sons. I want to be a father to the fatherless and launch sons to success in life. And if God will provide, someday we will open a home for his daughters as well. Next slide. I wanted to be right with God on this because I didn't want to get ahead of him. I already have a ministry. I'm already working as much as I can. We're starting to look for other employees. We're looking for a resident director for the Lionheart program. I'm looking for another couple who might want to be considering being missionaries and coming and doing a ministry at the door with us. We already need more people than we have. God, I really wanted to do this. I wanted to do it the moment I learned about the one young man who was homeless's situation so many years ago.
And God told me no. And he told me no for a specific reason. He said, you need to finish raising your own family first. I guess if I'm going to try to launch somebody else's kids, I better figure out how to launch mine. And I made it through that season of life. My own son, last one at home, was getting ready to leave for the Marine Corps. And I'm like, God, is it time? There was a home in our neighborhood I had thought about, and the price was a once-in-a-lifetime price. And I'm like, God, is this it? Would you let me know? And I did something I never do. I said, God, if now is the time. I have a board meeting in a week. The entire time God told me no, I was making plans. I'm not doing it yet, but I got a whole drawer full of plans of things that I think should happen, coming up with the savings reward program, all the stuff that we were going to need. I got plans. I just can't, it's not go yet. But God, one day you're going to say go, and when you say go, I'm going to run. And I asked God, I have a board meeting next week, and I want to announce this to them, and I want to share my plans with them and my heart and a vision for a new ministry. But I don't want to get ahead of you. I'm willing to hear no. So here's what I want, God. Would you, in the next week, before that meeting, would you have somebody meet with me that I don't ask for the meeting? And in that meeting, would they give me $1,000 to start this program? That's going to be so clear, I won't miss it. And if that doesn't happen, I won't go on. I'll stop. Well, I started praying, and then I had to not call people and arrange for meetings for a week. I'm like, God, I know I could make a call, or I could turn on some tears, maybe get somebody to. I don't want that. I want you to be in it. Wednesday, I got a call from an accountant, head of a firm in our community, a partner, and I thought, this is it. He's like, I want you to come to lunch. And I'm like, yes. And we went to lunch, and it was wonderful, and he asked me what we're doing, and I shared with him the new program, and I thought, Jesus, this is it. This is perfect. What a story this is going to be. And he paid for lunch, and that was it. And I'm like, God, can I tell you, you missed it. That was a perfect setup. He could afford it. And it didn't happen. And I bit my tongue, and I'm like, are you really willing to hear no? Do you really want me to be in this? Yes, Lord. We're coming up closer to the deadline. I spoke down in Bedford at a church on a Sunday, and Monday my wife calls me at 3 o'clock, or just before 3, I'm getting ready to go down to the door. She said, there are two senior citizens waiting for you down at the door. I'm like, okay. I don't like visitors at 3 o'clock. It isn't that I don't love them, but at 3 o'clock, kids come walking in, and they're hungry, and they don't care who's there to visit, tour, and all of that stuff. I want my Kool-Aid, and I want my cupcakes, and that's what I want. And you get out of their way. You just put it out on the table and walk back and not get bit, you know? And then you got to make dinner. And so that, from 3 to 4 is my busiest hour. It's the worst time to come and visit me. After they're fed, come on in, because all of the dogs and lions or whatever are laying around taking a nap or playing video games or whatever. But before you feed them, anyway. Two ladies come in. I give them a tour. The kids come in. Oh, we'll help make Kool-Aid. And so I have gotten used to taking care of dinner and drinks and snacks by myself, and I'm very fast at it. And when there are two more people in the way who are very wonderful and want to help, I'm frustrated. I can do, oh no, just tell us where you keep everything, and I'll be like, I could make this 6 times faster, but there are people, and God bless them, I loved them that they wanted to help, because not very many people drop in and go, can I cook with you? Can I help that way? And then they got drinks out, and I'm like, okay, I got to get dinner started. Thank you for coming. Oh, we'll help with dinner. No. And they did. And we got it ready, and I had to, okay, I need to invite them in, and I need to share with, okay, I need you to do this, you do that, and divvy up the work that I'm used to doing by myself. And we got dinner done, and one of the young men came in from school, and he goes, Dave, I forgot a permission form for church youth group. They're going to a thing, and I want to go, and I need my permission form tonight. I left it at school. He runs back to school, comes back. He's sweating, soaking wet, and he did not want to go to youth group that way, all right? Here's why. If you're a teenage boy with limited social skills, church youth group is the one place where available young ladies are present in large quantities. And he wanted to be there, but he did not want to be the sweaty kids. He's like, Dave, can I put on my gym uniform and put my clothes in the washer and dryer downstairs so that I have clean stuff for tonight? I'm like, sure. And he went to go, and I said, wait, take the laundry basket with you. He looks at me, what? I'm like, if you're going to do a load of laundry, you're not washing one shirt and one pair of pants. I'm like, take the towels from the kitchen, the aprons down, throw it all in together. Oh, okay. And he's super helpful. He's an upperclassman, so he did that. While he was downstairs, I heard, vroom, 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 and that's my best impersonation of a cell phone on vibrate. He comes back upstairs, and I was telling the lady, see, I try to get the kids to do chores and help out, and I'm just explaining to them the process of guiding a kid through life at the door. And he comes back up, and he picks up his phone, and he's shaking. Like, all the color drains out of him, he turns pale. And he looks at me and says something strange. He says, Dave, would you tell my mom that I wasn't not answering the phone, that I was doing something good, I was being helpful, I was just gone from my phone for a minute. Would you please tell her that? I'm like, sure. I'm thinking, why can't you tell her that? He calls back on the phone, and the screaming starts. I have hearing aids, okay? And I could hear mom screaming on a cell phone that I wasn't holding. And he's saying, Mom, I was being good. I was helping Dave. I was just in the basement for a few minutes doing laundry, and she wasn't hearing any of that. And he goes, would you please tell her? I get the phone. She yells at me. I'm like, ma'am, I don't know. You don't know. He lies. He's this and that. I'm like, he's one of the best kids we have. Mom has mental health issues. So she's paranoid that he's being bad all the time, and he's got to live in this world. And he's a good kid, and he's trying to get clean to go to church. I mean, lady, I got kids with issues. This is not one of them, all right? She's yelling at me, gave him the phone back. She wouldn't believe me. She came down, and he went outside, and in front of all of the kids, she yelled at him for about 10, 15 minutes. In front of the entire community. Main Street is a small town in Bellwood, and she just belittled him, shamed him, and defeated his heart. And those two ladies are watching out the window with me as I'm watching this. And I said, that kid right there is why I want that home that we had talked about. I said, because if he doesn't get out of the crazy, he's not going to make it. He doesn't get a place to get away from that, to grow up and to learn, and to not be playing psychological defense against somebody else's demons that he has nothing to do with. He will never make it, and I want a home for him. And one lady said, you know, we better get going. I left my husband in the car, and he has dementia. You've been here an hour and a half. He could be in state college by now on a train. You can't make this stuff up, okay? And the one lady turns to the other, and they turn to leave, and the one lady handed me an envelope, and in the envelope, I think there was like $50 in cash. She said, we just wanted to see what you do, and I want you to know we're praying for you. They missed me at church on Sunday. They didn't get to hear. They watched it on the internet the next day and literally called each other, got in the car, and drove up to see us immediately. And the other lady stopped at the door and turned and came back in, got out her purse and got out her checkbook, and she wrote a check for $1,000. And then I told her what I'd prayed for. And that was the unexpected meeting. And it wasn't an accountant with loads of money. It was a widow lady given from her poverty to take care of somebody else's son. And since that day, God has sent over $110,000 for that home since last April when we announced it. And we have a building, and we're renovating it, and I want to open this fall, and I need a live-in director. I need a young person, single guy, who wouldn't mind free room and board and a paycheck while he goes to college or whatever else, to try to be a part of that and help me father, or be a big brother, and I'll be the dad to some young men in this place. God has shown us that it's possible. And I know I'm going long. That's nothing new for me. Why Lionheart? Why the name? Because God is the lion. Jesus is the lion of the tribe of Judah. And if you think I can roar, he's so much louder. But he roars against the enemy that wants to steal the children. He roars against this world and its system that crushes souls and sends them off in despair and to death. He is the father of the fatherless. He is the strongest strong one. He came to introduce God as father, as daddy, who gives a spirit of adoption and has raised up us to be sons and daughters. And I want to do that for real. Not just in a spiritual sense, but for real. There are sons in need. And I don't want to be a shelter. I want to be family. And they won't be residents. They will be sons. Thank you for letting me share this morning. Tavi's got a song to sing. I asked for it. It's one that God's been using for me. We run the door day to day and sometimes literally paycheck to paycheck, dollar to dollar to add a new ministry to what we're doing is crazy if God wasn't in it. And God is in it, and the way God is in it is crazy. But there's one line in the song Tavi's going to sing. And it says, I'll send the rain wherever we end up. And in that life verse passage of mine, right after God is the father of the fatherless, it says, you gave abundant showers, O God, and you refreshed your weary inheritance. Let's pray. Father God, I thank you for the calling you put on my heart. Lord, a burden that I can't run away from and no longer wish to. Lord, I thank you for great provision, for great opportunities to share testimony, for passion, and for all of it. But Lord, all of it is for none if there's no harvest. All the passion, emotion, all the expenditure is nothing without a harvest. So Jesus, you said the fields are ripe and ready to harvest, but the workers, they're few. Jesus, send me the workers. Jesus, send what we need. And Lord, let us raise up a generation and not let one more fatherless generation pass into eternity without you. Let them have family. Let them be prized sons of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And I'll be privileged to do it till I die, because you're my father. And you rescued me. You fathered me. You have raised up men in my life to teach me how to do everything. And now, Lord, it's my turn to be that man. And Lord, this is your church. Father, call men from here. Call support from here. And give those here a vision to do the same in this community. For that is your lion heart, O God.